comments yet by Jerry Jones on the Anthem controversy contradicted assurances last week from Commissioner Roger Goodell and New York Giants President John Mara that players could express themselves without retribution. Several NFL teams have struggled with how to handle Anthem protests. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth, and this is my other host, Sean.
Hello.
So, you know, normally we talk about how you're feeling, but I'm going to skip that for right now.
Yeah, okay, good.
We have a pretty exciting guest tonight.
Yeah, well, we're really ramping it up for Halloween here.
We're well into
October. We've done vampires, and now...
Yeah. Last week, not one, but three vampires.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't had vampires before, but we just put them all in one show.
Yep.
Didn't space them out. Just burst of vampirism.
And tonight we have werewolves.
That's right.
Real life werewolves.
Yes, we'll be talking to a werewolf on the radio. Doesn't understand human speech, so it may be...
No, we'll be talking to Linda Godfrey. Now, Linda is the original reporter that was assigned and broke the case of the Beast of Bray Road.
So she's kind of a big deal. And I'm saying that unironically. Like, in the cryptid community, the Beast of Bray Road is pretty...
Yeah.
You know, even outside the cryptid community, plenty of people know what that is. I knew what that is.
Yeah. Well, they've made a horror movie of it.
Yeah, exactly. So this may be the most high-profile person we have talked to on this show.
Yeah. Yeah, or she is definitely the first guest. I hope this doesn't sound insulting, but the first guest that when I was given the name, I immediately knew that I knew that person.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
I mean, I can hear all of the past guests we've had on the show who are now faithful listeners, like throwing eggs at the radio or whatever people do.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I guess I had known not by name but by the show the guy who wanted to kill Bigfoot.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
But yeah. I didn't... I'm assuming... I think it's different, though, if you want to kill a werewolf.
Right. Well, you need silver bullets, all kinds of stuff.
Well, and I think Bigfoot is, like, kind of known for being somewhat peaceful, and werewolves cuddly, are kind of known for being murderous and infectious.
Well, not if you read any number of young adult novels. There.
Yeah. Then they're known for being shirtless and sexy. Is that what you're getting
at? No, I guess that doesn't mean that they're not ferocious.
Murderous and infectious.
And shirtless and sexy.
Right, right.
Well, actually, I think werewolves in most myths are shirtless. Sexy.
I don't think they have much choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's been a weird week for me. How's your week going?
Not bad. You know, I've been thinking a lot about, like, mythology and so forth since we did that vampire show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that we're following up so closely with werewolves because, in many cases, the two were intertwined.
Right.
You know, you have Hungary, Romania, lots of regions like that. It was thought that if you were a werewolf in life and you died, you became a vampire.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, that was the common theme in the myth. So, in most of the ancient myths, the way you become a vampire, sure, there's being bitten by a vampire, but that only works some of the time. The more common ways are, you know, if you were buried incorrectly, or if you were a sinful person during your life, or if you committed suicide, or any number of things. Those are the main ways you become one, and one of those ways is being a werewolf.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I imagine we'll hear more about this, though I don't know if she's into the folklore so much as the cryptid sightings,
yeah, which
are our own recent time.
I'm going to guess that she is, because she's written several books about it.
Yeah, so probably she can verify all of this stuff or tell us why it's just laughably false. But
yeah, I wonder if there's any, you know, factual, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, October is my favorite month.
Yes, same.
For two reasons. Obviously, I love Halloween. Yeah. I love horror movies. I love this paranormal stuff that we discuss. But also, we're broadcasting out of Redding, California.
Yes.
Which is hot.
October is the first tolerable month.
October is like when we get back to reality.
Yeah, it's when life begins again.
When you can, like, leave your sliding glass door open and not...
Yeah, it's basically, come October 1st, that's like the liberation of France.
Yeah.
You know, people are throwing their hats into the air and running around the river trail just because they can, and, you know, doing jumping jacks, people who haven't moved in 4 months.
Yeah, burying the dead, the ones that didn't survive the summer.
So, yeah, October's nice. It's a nice month.
So, yeah, I am very excited about Halloween. You got a costume? You're wearing the mask. We discussed this.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to wear the scarecrow mask. Sometimes I wear it in the booth when we're recording. So
I think
I'm very attached to it.
I think we skipped the gnome. I think I'm not going as the gnome.
The gnome?
Which I'm kind of happy about.
That's a shame.
Well, I think my wife has decided that she wants to go as a ringmaster.
So you'll be a lion?
I think I'll be a bear.
I should have guessed.
And we'll have a bite out of her neck.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, I've been mistaken for a bear before.
I can believe that, frankly.
Yeah, I have a funny story about it. I'll tell you before we go to commercial. So I'm on tour with my band at the time, the School Marms, and we go down to San Diego and we're playing. And my band... And the other bands that we were with, they all look like me. They're all, you know, big, overweight guys with beards.
Right.
All of us sitting at a table drinking beer at this...
With flannel.
Yeah, drinking beer at this hotel. And this group of guys comes up to us, and they're all, hey, are you guys here with the convention? And we're all, I don't know what you're talking about. They're all, okay. And they walk by. And... A few more minutes goes by, and another group of guys comes up, and they're just all, hey, you guys here with the convention? And we're all, I don't know. And we end up looking up and seeing a bunch of banners all around this hotel that it is the Sand and Sun Bear Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for those who don't know what a bear is, you might want to Google it, but we were mistaken for being
bears. It's an ursine quadruped that lives on berries and nuts.
Right. Yes.
You know, first grade education here.
Right.
No big deal, guys.
Right, right. All right, so you're listening to Radio Wasteland. Our guest tonight is Linda Godfrey, and we will be discussing werewolves. So come on back. You don't want to miss this.
Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me, Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think little big girl should go walking in these spooky old woods alone. Oh! What big eyes you have, the kind of eyes that drive. Sheet suit on till I'm sure that you've been shown that I can be trusted walking with you alone. Oh, Little Red Riding Hood, I'd like to hold you if I could, but you might think I'm a big bad wolf, so I won't. Oh,
Hi, I'm Brian Martin, General Manager at River Commons Senior Living, formerly known as River Oaks Retirement Community, a new name but the same caring staff, engaged residents, and beautiful community with a new family-run ownership. The goal of the new owners is to carry on the philosophy of always doing the right thing and creating an engaged and caring environment for both the residents and the staff, while preserving the distinguished designation of best retirement community in the North State 7 years in a row. River Commons is a warm, relaxed, carefree environment where the freedoms from daily chores allows you the opportunity to enjoy companionship and time for the things you enjoy the most. Call today for a tour or lunch in a tour and ask me how you can have us pay for your move or how you can save $1,000 when you move in. River Commons Senior Living, 301 Hartnell Avenue, or check out our website at river-commons.com.
Cold weather is quickly approaching Northern California. Give SST Oil a call today to hear their competitive prices for home heating fuel. Veterans are offered a 5% discount on heater sales and services and a 5% discount on home heating fuels. That's SST Oil. Give them a call at 241-1167. That's 241-1167. SST Oil. SST Oil supports our veteran community.
Redding Concrete is proud to help bring high school football to the radio here on KCNR 1460. Redding Concrete is your local ready-mix concrete provider. Exceptional customer service and a quality ready-mix product at competitive prices is our primary goal. Redding Concrete, located at 16855 Clear Creek Road. Give them a call at 530-244-7593 for your next concrete pour. Redding Concrete, serving you with a quality ready-mix product.
Analog living in a digital world. Every week on Boomer Tech Radio, we offer up the latest tech news you can use. Hi, it's Bob Belongi. It's even easier to listen to the show now that we're on iTunes. You'll find our archives and articles at boomertechradio.com, and the show is streamed live at kcnr1460.com. We review the latest goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and make sure you are up to date on the latest tech trend. Boomer Tech Radio, Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. on KCNR 1460, and now available as a podcast on iTunes.
Little Explorers is a program designed for 2 to 5 year olds and their caregivers. We provide an environment to enhance early childhood education and encourage children and adults to learn together. September's theme is Bubbles, where children become scientists and use tools to make observations and discover new things about bubbles. Free for members or included with park admission. Only at Turtle Bay.
Little Explorers, Thursdays 10 to 11 a.m. at Turtle Bay Exploration Park. For more, go online to turtlebay.com.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Kook, gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. Ah, ooh, werewolves of London.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Linda Godfrey. Linda, are you there with us? Hey, Linda, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. How are you doing?
Great. And how are you guys?
Oh, doing really good. We are really excited to have you on the show. You know, you're like you're a celebrity for what we do.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very nice of you.
You know, so normally I ask people, the very first question that I ask them is, how did they get started? But you got started in a way that's really sort of why you're a celebrity to us. And so... can you tell us about your getting started in the topic of werewolves and dogmen?
Sure. It wasn't anything that I expected or planned. I have to say that in the very first breath. I have a degree in art education, and I've also always been a writer, and I ended up at this small-town newspaper, mostly because I wanted to be their editorial cartoonist and ended up getting hired as a reporter. And right off the starting block, I started hearing these strange tales, and especially the rumor was brought together for me by a woman who was a school bus driver, and one of the high school students on her bus had told her that she saw what looked like a werewolf to her out on this street Actually, it's like an almost 4-mile country lane that connects two highways outside of Elkhorn, Wisconsin, which is down in the southeast corner of Wisconsin. And the woman said, well, that sounds like what happened to my daughter about 3 years ago. And they compared notes, and then they started finding out that other people in the vicinity of this road, which is called just simply Bray Road, again, not any big spooky lane, it's just a country byway that connects these, it's lined with houses, farms, fields, you know, just ordinary, very typical looking southeastern Wisconsin street. So you wouldn't expect people to be saying, I saw a werewolf. And I laughed. I remember I thought that was absolutely crazy. I was familiar somewhat with Bigfoot and UFOs because my dad was a hunter, and he always had all those men's magazines, you know, with the hunting Bigfoot type of stories in them. So I had seen those things, and also he had what he thought was maybe a UFO follow him in a pickup truck up in northern Wisconsin when he was younger. So it wasn't that I never heard of any of these odd things. It was just that, I mean, werewolves is just not something you hear about in the modern day world. So it happened that I was at the time working on a different story with our county animal control officer. He was looking into puppy mills, you know, illegal and kind of cruel places that were rearing these giant puppy broods. And I said, well, by the way, have you heard anything about this kind of weird wolfish thing? I know I didn't even call it a werewolf because right from the get-go, I didn't like that word because what people were describing to me really didn't sound like the typical old-style werewolf. It was just some kind of a wolf-like thing walking and running on its hind legs. And he said, you mean this? And he opened up his desk drawer, pulled out a manila file folder, which was labeled, I kid you not, werewolf. And he opened it up. I mean, you know, that when you have a county official with a file folder marked werewolf,
yeah,
that is active and that he's, you know, using, that's news, you know. And well, I thought right away there.
It's his job, you know, if that's what people are calling it. I guess he got to put a label on it.
Oh, that's funny.
Exactly. And, you know, right away it struck me because I opened it and I saw all these names of people and their contact info and their statement, you know, as to what they saw. And it occurred to me, you know, people who are committing fraud or perpetrating hoaxes don't generally phone the local authorities with all of their contact information. You know, it's kind of counterintuitive to do that sort of thing.
Plus, in a small population, I mean, how many people, you know, I think to perpetrate a fraud like that, like you're saying, it's exhausting. It's a lot of effort, you know. Per capita, how exactly many people in a small area are really dying to put that effort in,
yeah,
you know?
Right. And you, when you think that it would have involved people, you know, getting an expensive sort of fur suit and hiding in cornfields and jumping out and taking that risk of getting hit by cars, which does happen and has happened in other states with people doing just that sort of thing. You know, it just didn't seem right. Not only that, I kind of knew who some of these people were, you know, where there was, you know, the a high school student that I knew had, I asked her to go and ask around, and she said, yeah, she had heard of people who had either seen it or knew about it. So I knew that this was kind of a viable thing that was going around town. And not only that, some of the sightings, it wasn't like all of these things were blobbed up together in one event, which is usually what happens when you've got somebody playing pranks. There were people going back to like 1981, which, and I should mention this was early 1991 or late 1991, early 1992 that this was occurring. And I had 10-year-old cases already from people. So I knew something was really different about this. And my editor agreed. And so I wrote up the story, and it ran in that year's New Year's Eve issue. And I remember my editor saying, well, you know, people are going to have fun with this for about 2 weeks, and then they'll forget about it. We'll be on to the next thing. And nothing was ever farther from the truth, because no sooner had it gone out than I started getting calls from radio stations, TV shows, local TV, national TV, Inside Edition came out. You know, all these, it was just really almost overwhelming. And not only that, and really more importantly to me, there were other people from other parts of the country and Canada and other, I remember I had one from the Virgin Islands where people were saying, say, you know, this is no joke, I saw this thing and it's real, you know, and they tell me about it. And so I knew there was really more to it than any of us had ever expected. And the thing was, really, not many people were paying any attention to what I call contemporary werewolf-type creature sightings or upright canine sightings. It was all about Bigfoot and UFOs, and nobody else really seemed to be too much interested in paying any attention. And I felt like somehow these people were contacting me, and many of them entrusting me with encounter stories that they'd carried around with them for up to decades. And I felt like I needed to sort of be the keeper of the lore, even if nothing else ever came of it or nothing else was ever printed, because I continued to work for that newspaper for 10 years, writing all types of different news stories and doing the illustrations and cartoons. I also, for a time, was teaching art part-time in a couple of grade schools, you know, so I was pretty busy doing other things. But finally, after about 10 years had gone by, and the interest level just never died down. It just kept increasing and increasing, and I thought, well, I really need to put this into a book where people can have something to consult. It'll all be there. They'll know how it was for our town. And I was very interested in that sociological aspect of what happens to a town, a very conservative, small Wisconsin town, when all of a sudden people are talking about werewolves and there are busloads of Illinois tourists coming up and going out to the bars and having a Silver Bullet special and then getting a special bus ride down Bray Road. And, you know, I mean, it was just...
Well, okay.
Something that
we're about to come up on break here, but I got to ask, what is the Silver Bullet special?
Oh, that's a drink. It refers to a brand. I think it's beer. I may get this wrong.
Oh yeah, it's Coors. Much, Coors is the Silver Bullet.
Yes, the Coors. Yes, yep, exactly.
I see.
Exactly. And so that was, you know, a drink that was. Made in the taverns at the time. We even had the bakery making werewolf cookies.
That's funny, but I mean that's not uncommon for places to sort of embrace their local culture. But so we got about 2 minutes until break here. But you know, how many sightings were there in a given time?
Well, the very first flutter, you know, that I knew about. There were almost a dozen, at least, because one involved like four junior high children, one of which my son knew very well and was sure that he wasn't lying about it or anything. And then there was another tier of almost a dozen that I learned about right away. And then they've come in steadily ever since, you know. So at least three dozen that I know of right there. But then there are many, many more as you spread out into the adjoining countryside and the adjoining counties. And, you know, it's hard to say, but 26 years later, I'm still getting reports, not, of course, just from Bray Road, although I still do, but all over the place. So it's hard to put any exact number on it, but a lot.
Okay, well, we're going to go to commercial break, so I don't get you wrapped up in another topic, but... Man, we're into this. We're just sort of sitting here staring at each other, listening to what you're telling us. So we're very excited to have you. We're going to commercial. You're listening to Linda Godfrey on Radio Wasteland. Come on back.
Blue moon, you saw me standing alone. Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really care for.
value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name.
I'm Jeff Fink, president and CEO of Cornerstone Community Bank, and I invite you to stop by our new downtown Reading branch located at 1845 California Street, one block south of Jack's Grill, or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Our team is ready to spoil you with personalized service.
Cornerstone Community Bank, we invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
As gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearm specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard-to-find ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane and Wall Street in Reading. Join the revolution.
Free Fire Radio is your town hall of the Shasta County airwaves Monday through Friday from 7 to 9. Tuesday's featured guest will be Douglas Wright, attorney at law, with advice on keeping your company alive in California's hostile climate. We will also welcome Northern Business Association, helping with opportunities for companies. And a week after the Las Vegas shootings, why is there still so little information being released? Calls and comments welcome. Free Fire Radio, miss a day, miss a lot.
Join Aaron Ryan, Bill Cundiff, and Bob Martin for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon till 2. Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media soundbites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join us this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. And we welcome your suggestions for future topics and guests at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We the People, now on Sundays from noon till 2 on AM 1460 KCNR. In the 40s, Reading Cab and Yellow Cab merged, and Reading Yellow Cab was born. A lot has changed since then. The town has more than tripled in size, and so have they. Through the decades, they've served Reading with generations of trustworthy drivers, family men and women treating their customers with the respect and professionalism they'd expect for their own families. When you need to get to or from the airport or the train station, perhaps, Reading Yellow Cab is there for you. When you need a safe ride home, need to do some shopping, or want someone to shop for you, call Reading Yellow Cab at 222-1234.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Linda Godfrey. We're talking about werewolves, and in particular, when we went to break, we were talking about the Beast of Bray Road. Linda, were there a lot of evidence outside of just the sightings? Were there footprints? Were there clumps of hair? Were there missing children? You know, anything like that?
Well, you know, at the time, there really wasn't too much. I didn't really see any footprints. Nobody. I had heard about some footprints, but they sounded more like Bigfoot footprints. They were just huge, human-shaped footprints. And there actually have been Bigfoot sightings on Bray Road too. I've had about three of them at least over the years. But there have been since huge canine type prints found in other areas around, not just southeastern Wisconsin again, but in other places. But Ombre Road itself, I really didn't have anything like that, like a footprint or hair sample to go on. It was pretty much on the anecdotal evidence from eyewitnesses. And there were a couple of cars that the people said the creature ran after their car and kind of flung itself at the trunk and scraped it. And there were scratches that were consistent with something like a large paw scraping across it. But there wasn't any way to prove it, really, you know, because you don't really leave any, there was no material matter left behind that you could examine.
Right. So this led you to a lot of what you've written about is werewolves and dogmen, right?
Well, I prefer the term unknown upright canine, but my editors don't think that that's really great for book titles. They prefer the term werewolves.
Right.
And, you know, it's just a lot sexier to say werewolf than unknown upright canine.
Right, right.
But the other term, dogman, has kind of become very popular in the last 2 years because as some of the other locations that have had this sort of flap have become known, you know, one of them, of course, was in Michigan, and it became known as the Michigan Dogman. And that actually happened in 1987. So that was, you know, years before the Beast of Bray Road. But that one just never went national. I had never heard of it until the guy who was kind of the first one on that one called me and said, hey, we had this here in Michigan right by Traverse City and these other places. So the dogman, it's a little easier to say, I guess. And in some ways, although we don't really know if these things are part dog or if they are a wolf-dog hybrid or they're all wolf, we just don't, or something else entirely, we just don't know. So I guess dogman is as good as anything, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they are part dog and part man.
Well, in the case of like Bigfoot, you know, they seem to sightings and it has such a huge community that there's skunk apes and there's Bigfoots and there's different kinds and stuff like that. Kind of felt like this was starting to happen with the upright...
unknown upright canine.
Yeah,
the WUCs. Thank you.
like the rodents of unusual size.
Are different types.
Yeah, so do you get drastically different types of sightings?
Yeah, there are different types of encounters and there are different types of creatures. Most of them, you know, and I'm going to go on a limb and say probably at least around 90% of them, are very similar to what was being described back on Bray Road and by people who saw the Michigan Dogman. And this was something that had a head like a wolf or German Shepherd, completely canine, with a long muzzle, fangs, pointed ears on top of the head. It stood and walked and ran powerfully on hind legs, was covered with dark, shaggy fur in most cases, although others are described sometimes as gray or brown, you know, different textures of coats, whatever you'd see as variation in a wild wolf pack. And the big thing, though, is that, and they do have a tail, unlike Bigfoot, but they're seen running on their toe pads. It would be the same as if we were running on our tiptoes and our heels were off of the ground. They have kind of a longer, in comparison, foot bone there, so that what would be the heel bone that we would expect to be seeing, it's called the hock, is what witnesses call pointed backwards. They'll say it was running really great, but its legs were pointed backwards, and it's because they run on their toe pads, or the fancy word is digitigrade.
So that's not that my dog is probably the best comparison because he's a chihuahua, but... that's kind of like how they have their little dew claw up there, and so that whole thing is their foot, and they're kind of like on the tip of their foot.
Right, okay. Exactly. Yeah, anybody can look at your pet dog, and then you'll kind of understand. But most people, you know, we just never think about the structure of a dog's leg unless we're trying to describe something huge that was running after our car and we don't know what it was, you know.
Right.
And then all of those details become sort of important. But so most of the sightings describe something just about like that. And in fact, my very first book, which was called The Beast of Bray Road, Tailing Wisconsin's Werewolf, I did kind of a forensically inspired sketch of what most people were describing to me, and they still to this day mostly say that this is what it looked like. I called it the indigenous dog man. But there are other types, and I don't know that these are all, again, the same creatures, but there's another type seen especially in parts of northern Wisconsin called the bear wolf. And this is something that arose independently of me. I named the Beast of Bray Road, but not the bear wolf. And this is something that looks just like a wolf walking on its hind legs, but it's sort of a beefed-up wolf in that it's got a broader chest and kind of a thicker head. It reminds people just in those things of a bear, but combined with a wolf. The rest of it is wolf-like. It's not running plantigrade. It doesn't have that kind of, you know, low body gravity that the bears have. You know, if you see a bear loping along, it's always kind of rear-end heavy. It's
right.
got its own shape. It's very
right.
different. Then there are some that seem, especially if you go near, I get most of these reports from Native American reservation areas, where they'll see something that really looks a lot more human. It might have a more human-like face. It more have hands instead of elongated paws. Sometimes it's got a rag or two of tattered clothing on. And these are what they call the skinwalkers, or the things that are produced by occult practices of certain Native American medicine men or shamans. So that's a different type.
So,
then you've got some.
Sorry, go ahead. Then you have what?
I'm sorry. Did you need?
No. Go ahead.
Okay. Yep. There's another kind that just runs like quadrupeds, but they're so highly unusual looking. They have razorbacks, and they're huge. Some people describe them as the size of Shetland ponies. They're very apt to run after cars and kind of bam into them on the doors as the cars are driving. There are several other types. You know, those are probably the main ones. Then there are ones that are obviously phantoms, because you wake up in the middle of the night, you sit up, and there's one or two of them either staring in your bedroom window as at a height that nothing ordinary could reach, or they're in the house with you. You know, and I have... seems like I have a growing number of these. And sometimes they're transforming, which is, again, a great rarity compared to most of the sightings. But it tells me that they're not all the same thing.
Well, that last one sounds like sleep paralysis more than anything else. Though I'm at a loss to explain all the others.
And sleep paralysis is definitely a thing, you know, that people have to consider. But in a lot of these, they were in daylight, in full sunlight.
Oh.
People, you know, weren't sleeping. They were walking in their apartment or something. So it's not always
bizarre.
Applicable. And those are the ones you have to wonder about.
Yeah.
So what do you think we're dealing with here? Of course, I know there's no definitive answer, but do you think we're dealing with something either changing, like from man to beast or supernatural, or do you think we're dealing with a species of something?
Really the best theory that or paradigm that fits all of the facts is what my Native American friends that I've consulted, and I've been able to speak to, tribal elders, anthropologists within the tribes. And most of them that I've spoken with believe that these things are what they call originally spirit animals, and that they come from somewhere else that they call the spirit world. When they come here, they have to conform to the rules of our physical world so that they're solid, they're flesh and blood. They have to eat to get energy, and they can reproduce here, but they can also go back, you know, at certain times. And you know, I don't know if anybody knows the where's or the why's of that, but that really solves all of the discrepancies that there are between any of the sightings. And
I see.
I like to think that that's really the way it is. I do not still believe that people change physically you know, all their corpuscles, all their DNA, everything that's involved in the physicality of a human being, changing into everything that's involved in the physicality of another species, a different, very different species, such as a wolf.
Well, let me cut you off there. We're going to a commercial break, but sure. We'll be right back with Linda Godfrey right here on Radio Wasteland.
Holiday Harbor, we've got it all for you. But we're more than just great houseboats. We have the vacation you have been looking for without the drive or airport hassle. Fishing boats, patio boats, 47-foot party cruisers, wakeboards, jet skis, and stand-up paddleboards. If it floats or you can pull it behind a boat, we probably have it for your enjoyment. Visit Holiday Harbor, exit 695 of Interstate 5, or go to LakeShasta.com. Holiday Harbor, your own vacation in town.
I'm here with Dr. Sam Carino of Shasta Spine Specialists. Doc, tell us about this new system, the DRX-9000.
The DRX-9000 is the only true non-surgical spinal decompression system. The DRX-9000 can effectively treat common and debilitating back pain, neck pain, stenosis, and sciatica.
We hear over and over about people just having or getting ready to have back surgery. Now, why is that?
Too many people are having back surgery when the technology for non-surgical disc repair is right here in Reading.
So when you compare back surgery to non-surgical decompression like the DRX-9000, what are some of the main differences?
Non-surgical spinal decompression is safer, more effective, more financially reasonable, and much less invasive with no side effects or dependence on harmful prescription drugs.
Explore all options and potentially avoid a painful, long, expensive recovery with back surgery. See if the DRX-9000 is right for you. Call Dr. Sam Carino of Shasta Spine Specialists, 243-2300. You can also find them online at ShastaSpine.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kara Tennant with CARE Animal Hospital, and I'm inviting you to join me on the Carl and Linda Morning Show. We will be discussing all of Reading's local pet needs and how to keep your pet happy, healthy, and safe. CARE Animal Hospital is a local veterinary clinic located on the corner of Hilltop Drive and Lake Boulevard. Make sure your best friend has the best possible care today.
Join Dr. Kara Tennant on Friday morning, October 20th, from 8 to 9 on Free Fire Radio, here on AM 1460 KCNR.
Black Bear Diner was started by a couple of hungry guys with a big dream. That dream? Good old-fashioned family food with great service. Like the classic Volcano Breakfast. Secret recipe sweet cream pancakes, hickory smoked bacon, sausage, and fresh cracked eggs. Mmm. Served day or night at over 100 Black Bear Diner locations. Feeding all you hungry bears out there makes us so proud.
Here's your breakfast for dinner. No more coffee?
Thanks, Rosie. I'm sorry. Pancakes at sunset make me a little emotional.
Join One Safe Place on Wednesday, October 18th at the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center for Undaunted, an evening of inspiration with guest speaker Matthew Sandusky, adopted son of former Penn State coach Jerry Sandusky, who will discuss his journey from being a victim to becoming a survivor. Undaunted is a One Safe Place benefit dinner to help support a community affected by family violence. For tickets, table, and sponsorship information, visit One Safe Place at ospshasta.org.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Linda Godfrey. We are talking about werewolves and dogmen and unknown upright canines.
Wait, I think that might have been right, actually. Was that right?
I think that was right.
Okay. Yes, well done.
All right. So, Linda, I am a big fan of horror films. You know, everybody has their little ways that they got into this stuff. Mine really mm-hmm. stemmed from horror movies. And they made a movie of The Beast of Bray Road. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Was that accurate?
Yes.
Really?
Well, it was. Oh, you mean was the movie accurate to the events? No.
Okay.
No, not anywhere nearly close.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
The Beast was accurate, though.
Yeah, you were accurate in saying there was a movie with that name.
All right,
they took your answer.
Took
the name, they took the name and they took the general locale. And then it was basically 8 or 9 different ways that a werewolf could kill a human being in horrific manners.
Right.
And it just, you know, there just wasn't anything that tallied with what really happened. I have to say, I know there have been a few places in the country where people claim to have had you know, violent incidents, and some of them, one of the persons at least I know quite well, and I believe them. I think there may be other exacerbating circumstances that might make them behave this way. But in 26 years, and understand, I'm still getting some type of report, usually at least one a week on the average, sometimes more. So that's a lot of reports. I've only had one where a human was actually injured, and he thought that was sort of an accident that he jumped the wrong way when the creature was trying to jump and get out of his way. In almost every incident, they scare the people. They may even seem to sort of, you know, pose in an attitude to frighten them, act territorial, and then they jump into the cornfield or the brush or whatever cover is nearby. And they are almost always seen near something that they can hide themselves in when they have to.
So is the area around there like a place where there could be a population living? You know, is it that sparse there?
Well, it's really much more forested here than people realize. Even in southeastern Wisconsin, we have a lot of parks, lots of cornfields and tall hay fields, which are very easy for you know, a canine to get around in, and more importantly, lots of deer and lots of turkey. And it's combined with there are two state parks, there's state forests, the Kettle Moraine State Forest, southern and northern units, which together comprise a lot of land. And this is where the glaciers form these deep pockets down into the earth, kind of bowl-shaped depressions with ridges. And the holes are the kettles, and then the ridges are the moraines. And the Bigfoot reports started coming into me from those Kettle Moraine areas almost immediately back in 91, 92. And I've been those are almost more numerous than the Dogman reports. But it's interesting because from the beginning, I started kind of just, you know, looking always on the map and seeing where they were. And I noticed the Bigfoot liked to be, or at least I assume that because this is where they were reported, in the deep kettles area. And the Dogmen or unknown upright canines would be seen wherever that stopped and flattened out into flat prairie, because they were using a different type of hunting method and could also have the advantage over the Bigfoot of being able to get around on all fours and not really being recognized for anything other than a big dog or maybe a wolf. So the answer is, yeah, there's definitely enough here to sustain not huge numbers. And I don't think there are huge numbers of these things, you know, and just enough for a breeding population that probably ranges and forages quite a bit. That's just what I gather.
Plus, if it's a skinwalker sort of situation, it's not necessarily like a population. It's like
Right, exactly. And those are things that are really controlled by the people that are able to project. From what I've been able to find out, they can project either some outside energy that we don't really know about, or their inner second bodies or astral bodies or psychic force, whatever you want to call it, that they can project to appear to be one of these animals, but they're just not quite, they don't make it to the entire animal as it should look. That's why you get this different look. And they're also quite large.
So unfortunately, we only have about 5 more minutes of the show left, so let's talk about a few of the books that you've written. So the first book was about the Beast of Bray Road. What was your next book?
Well, and actually, I had one other book before that was about a poison widow, a true crime poisoner who was a widow in Whitewater, Wisconsin, called The Poison Widow, True Story of Sin, Strychnine, and Murder. And I went to my publisher when I delivered the manuscript, and they said, what else have you got? And I said, well, would you believe werewolves? And then I described what I meant by that. So that was actually my second book. The third book was I had such a reaction from that first book on The Beast of Bray Road that I got a ton of more reports, and I felt obligated to put those into a book. That was called Hunting the American Werewolf, and that became the basis for Monster Quest's Season 1 American Werewolf episode. Then they continued on from there. I was asked to do the Weird Wisconsin and Weird Michigan books for Barnes & Noble, with kind of co-author those. Recently I've been working with Penguin Random House and have three books with them: Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America, Monsters Among Us, which is the most recent, and American Monsters. And I'm working on another one for them right now.
And so for our listeners that would like to find out more about you, can you tell us some of your contact information?
Sure. Yeah, you can find a list of those books, my blog with stories that aren't in the books, not all of them anyway, and all kinds of other information, even a form that you can write to tell me your incident, all at lindagodfrey.com. You don't have to even use the www's. It's a WordPress blog, so just go to lindagodfrey.com, and it'll all be in one place. It'll link you to my Twitter, to my Facebook author page. Everything's right there.
Well, I got to tell you, I've really enjoyed having you on. I hope, we were talking about this before you came on, that I hope this doesn't sound insulting to my other guests, but when Andrea, who is our unsung other member of our show here, she does a lot of our booking, when she told me that you were going to be on, you were the first name that I immediately knew that I knew who that was. You know, I'm just like, oh, I know exactly who that is. Yeah, so it has been very exciting for us, and sorry to go so much into Bray Road. I mean, I know you have a lot more other things going on. It's maybe a story you're tired of telling, but, man, we aren't tired of hearing
it. Oh, I never get tired of it.
Well, we really appreciate you being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Linda Godfrey on Radio Wasteland. Don't forget to check her out. LindaGodfrey.com and RadioWasteland.us. Thanks for checking us out.
Come on, come on. KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Keith Peters. Fires continue to burn out of control in both northern and southern California. The most serious blazes are north of San Francisco and have seared the city of Santa Rosa. Santa Rosa Police Captain Craig Schwartz says a curfew is in effect for the city.
The city of Santa Rosa, through the city manager's authority under an emergency declaration, has enacted a curfew for the mandatory evacuation zones from 6:45 p.m. sunset until sunrise.
Officials say they're already beginning to see problems with looting. 10 people have died in the fires and some 1,500 structures have been destroyed.